I got my first job in journalism by showing them my fanzines that you know, I'd written for. So, because that was the only thing I had that was published. So yeah, I'm a true believer in fan fiction and people, you know, creating their own fanzines and creating their own, these days, podcasts and websites, because I think that's where you can begin to learn your craft. Hi, my name's Kevin Scott, the writer of Dooku Jedi Lost and Return to Vader's Castle, and you're listening to Star Wars Highs.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another exciting episode of Star Wars Ties. I am your host, Jamison Stout, and with me is my amazing, illustrious, super ready to be here co-host, Mr. Lando Fett. How you doing, man?
Oh, I'm doing great, considering
it's a little
what time
early
of the,
for us.
Of the day it is.
we are recording at a rather early hour of the morning for us, but it's because we have an awesome opportunity today to interview with the Star Wars author, Mr. Kevin Scott. And we're really excited about this. This is going to be a lot of fun. So we're looking forward to it. He's ready to go. So he sent me a message, and we'll go ahead and invite him and hop into the conversation. You ready, Landon?
Awesome. I'm ready, man.
Awesome. Let's go. Mind if we call you Kevin?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, go for
okay,
it.
Okay, great. Kevin, my name is Jamison, and this is my co-host, Landon.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Landon. I was saying I am amazed and a little bit humbled that you would get up this early in the morning to talk to me. It's that's real dedication.
Well, the feeling's mutual.
Well, thank you again. We are, like I said, really excited about this, and we just have a few questions for you about specifically Star Wars. Our podcast is called Star Wars Ties. We usually focus on like the expanded universe, the books and the comics and everything like that related to Star Wars. And we have been doing a theme, or we've started a theme for the fall that is based on Star Wars horror. And we've crossed your Tales of Vader's Castle comics for the IDW run a few months ago. And we were like, this would be perfect. And getting a chance to ask you a little bit about them and pick your brain on it would just be icing on the cake for our listeners.
Sure, no worries at all.
So our first question for you is, what was your first experience writing for the Star Wars universe?
It was a series of middle grade books, chapter books for kids called Adventures in Wild Space. It was a few years ago now. Basically, they were a series of books originally published in the UK that were the times within. We have a thing called World Book Day over here, where every year every kid in school gets a voucher to get one of these or small sampler books, and they're always original books, and they're by the latest authors or whatever, and one's always tied into a franchise. And that year, it was just before Phantom Menace, that would have been a long time ago. It was just before Force Awakens came out, and they wanted a Star Wars book, but it was a funny time because it was before Force Awakens, so they didn't really want to do anything with the Force Awakens characters because they were unknown quantities at that time. They didn't really want to do anything with the original trilogy or the prequel characters because they didn't want to. There'd be a lot of kids who'd be picking this up who may be the first time they've ever read Star Wars. So, you know, they might have been their introduction to these characters. So they didn't want to confuse matters. So they went to Egmont in the UK and said, would you come up with a new series to tie into it? So they asked me if I would like to be a part of it. I had to write an audition piece, which obviously I said yes to. And it was a series called Adventures in Wild Space, and it's set just after the prequel trilogy in the early days of the Empire, and it's about a family of explorers in wild space, and the parents get kidnapped by the abducted by the Empire, and the kids have to go and try and find them. And there was a series of books that followed. And so, yeah, that was my first experience. It was crazy because it was this thing that every kid had these vouchers, and they put them in. The Star Wars books was the most popular, obviously. So for one heady week, I was the number one bestseller in the UK because of this book, which was crazy.
That's awesome.
And then was replaced the following week by a book by Roald Dahl. But I'll take that. You know, if anyone's going to knock me off the top spot, it'd be Roald Dahl. I'd like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was my first experience, and it went from there, really.
Wow. That's pretty exciting.
That's some good company to be in with Roald Dahl.
It was, yeah, really. And the week before, it had been Mary Berry from the British Baking Show, and I managed to knock her off. So Star Wars defeated Mary Berry, so we're always very happy about that.
Star Wars and food, two of the top sellers.
Exactly.
So my question is, what is it like working so closely with Lucasfilm/Disney?
It's really great. I think there's a lot of misconceptions about the way Story Group and Lucasfilm are, and they work with writers, but it's a real partnership. And what happens is that you put together synopsis, you get invited to write certain things, you get asked to put together a synopsis, and most of the time, it's a pretty vague brief as well. For Dooku Jedi Lost, which was the audio drama I wrote that came out this year, it was basically, you know, we want you to do something on Dooku. It has to be when he's a Jedi. And here are some ideas of places you could take it, not that you should take it, but, you know, here is what we've been thinking. So you get that kind of a thing, or you get a brief, come up with a story for Chewie and Han, and that's as far as the brief goes. You put together the synopsis, you send it in, and then depending on which project it is, either one or a couple of the story group will come back with notes. And the notes are always brilliant. Like all notes for an editorial project and for a fiction project, they annoy you when you first read them, only because you actually know, in the heart of hearts, you know they're right. And, you know, there are things you push back on and you go, oh, no, but I want to do this. And sometimes that's fine, but then sometimes you push back on something and I find time and time again, I push back on something and end up having an argument with myself in my reply. So, but I think this is wrong, and this is why it's wrong. I mean, we could do this, which means you could do that, which means that would be better. So, yeah, actually, your note's fine. And it always works like that. And, yeah, Story Group just know this stuff so much. Quite a lot of the stuff when you're dealing with them is a case of like, oh, actually, don't use that ship because we're using that over here. But I tell you what, if you can't use that, why don't you use this? And they give you better toys to play with every time. Or you'll be writing something and they say, oh, this can tie into something that's happening in an upcoming movie. Why don't you make this alien instead of making it a Twi'lek? Why don't you make it this alien who's coming up in, you know, episode 9 or whatever? Yeah, it's great. I really enjoy it. It's definitely a partnership, and I've had the privilege of being at Skywalker Ranch for a couple of projects where, you know, you're sitting there with the entire group, and the energy in those rooms are fantastic because everyone there loves Star Wars and has a long history with Star Wars, and so it gets very, very geeky very fast, and we start throwing things around, some of which would never happen, you know, and there's bits and bobs in scripts, especially when you're writing things like Chewie, because I always write what Chewie's saying. And I'm always putting little in-jokes for Story Group in that they'd say that if this ever gets printed with the translation, can you please remove this? But it's all, you know, you put things in there to make people laugh. And so it's definitely a partnership. It's a really good working environment at the minute that, you know, that it's one of the most creative places I've been.
Wow. So you're describing a lot of the process of working with them, but what about your individual writing process? What is that like?
Well, I mean, I'm very fortunate in the fact that I do this full time now. So I do treat it like a proper job. I, you know, I get up and I'm at my desk at 9 and I try and finish around 5:36 to spend time with the kids. Doesn't always work like that. But, you know, I treat it like that. I mean, the process is, I plan everything before. I'm an outliner. Because I come from the background of working on licensed property, you have to outline everything to get it approved. So even when I'm writing my own material, I still outline. And so I outline whether that's books, audios, comics, whatever. Outline first, break down stories, and break down the story's arcs. And then I'm a real sucker for sitting down and then just churning. And my first draft is always dreadful and written really quickly. And people have said to me, because I sort of say on Twitter every now and then, oh, I've written 5,000 words today. And they're like, how do you do that? It's like, you haven't read them. They're awful. But I just like churning out nonsense in a stream of consciousness, and then I have to go back and recraft it and actually make it good and readable. But yeah, so I have these days when I have massive chunks where I just sit there hyped up on coffee and tea, and just sit there and my, you know, the keyboard's clacking, and I just churn words out, and as I say, most of them are dreadful and will never be seen by another human being. And then it's a case of crafting it into something that's readable. So yeah, I'm a massive outliner. I can sit for hours writing, but then I have to really work on whatever I've just written.
Wow. Yeah. You mentioned that you had worked for other franchises and things like that.
Yes.
We noticed that you wrote for Doctor Who and Sherlock Holmes, among others. Yeah. What franchise inspired you to become a writer?
I think it was probably Doctor Who. I mean, you probably tell from my accent, I either belong to the Empire or I'm British. some people would say is the same thing. So I grew up with a heady mix of Doctor Who and Star Wars in the 70s. And I mean, Doctor Who, it's big now. I mean, it was huge in the 70s when I was growing up, and with Tom Baker as the Doctor.
Right.
And so I started writing what now we know as fan fiction and sending stuff off to fanzines, which again were a big part of Who fandom in the 70s and early 80s. You know, photocopied fanzines that people put together in their bedrooms and sell via the Doctor Who Appreciation Society. So I used to send off articles and short stories and dreadful things when I'd mash up Batman and Doctor Who and things like that. And
that would be awesome.
Well, yeah, it really wasn't, though. But yeah, the idea was that. And I would always focus on the really bad monsters that no one liked in Doctor Who, because I always tried to make them, you know, monsters that people took the mickey of. I tried to make as terrifying as possible. And so, yeah, it was Doctor Who. Doctor Who, I think, inspired a lot of people in my generation to write, because I think it had that slightly homespun quality to it. Because you could tell, I mean, you can't really tell when you're a kid that, you know, the cliche of the set's wobbling and the monsters being, you know, you can see the people underneath the costumes and that kind of thing. But it did have that element, and there was a real culture of making your own Doctor Who, whether that was writing comics, writing stories, audio plays were huge, because audio is a massive market over here anyway. So
right.
People would make their own Doctor Who audio dramas, and you'd send off a tape and they'd record it for you and then send it back. And so there was this big culture of creating as being a Doctor Who fan. You know, it wasn't just what you saw on the TV or read in the comics. It was creating your own version in your own canon as well. So yeah, that was it really. And as I said, I would mash everything up. So it would be a case of, you know, I'd be writing Doctor Who, but we, at the time, Doctor Who magazine over here was published by Marvel UK, who also obviously published all the Marvel things. So quite regularly, you'd have the Doctor turning up in things like Fantastic Four over here. So
oh, wow.
It was this weird, it was like the event, it was like the MCU long before the MCU. And so you'd have Doctor Who turning up in Transformers, who would then have Spider-Man in it, because that's what Marvel UK did. And so my fan fiction sort of followed that thing, that any universe was fair game, especially if you had a TARDIS, because you could travel forwards in time, backwards in time, and sideways in time, so you can go into different dimensions. So, you know, the TARDIS would turn up on the Enterprise, the TARDIS would turn up on the Falcon. And so, yeah, all of my fiction was a mashup. And that's what, yeah, so fan fiction was definitely how I started. My first, I sort of talked about, before we were recording the podcast, I was talking about my previous life. I was a journalist. I got my first job in journalism by showing them my fanzines that you know, I'd written for, so because that
wow.
was the only thing I had that was published. So yeah, I'm a true believer in fan fiction and people, you know, creating their own fanzines and creating their own, these days, podcasts and websites, because I think that's where you can begin to learn your craft.
Wow, that's awesome.
That's cool that it just, you know, it's kind of started out as a passion project that led to a full-time, you know,
yeah,
writing gig.
I mean, I'm so happy that, I mean, I always say that my to-do list is the same now as when I was 10, you know, so I'm very lucky that I play in the same sandpits that I literally played in when I was a kid. So it's sort of one thing. There's a great line in Doctor Who of, I'm going to misquote it now, but what's the point of growing up if you can't be childish every now and then? And I think when you're a writer, you have to be childish, especially when you're writing stuff like this. You have to remember why, as a 12-year-old or a 10-year-old or an 8-year-old, you love this stuff. And so, yeah, hopefully I will never grow up.
So with that being said, do you prefer writing for comics or novel-style books more?
They're very different beasts, and what I love about what I do is I get the chance to write both, because when you've written a lot of... At the minute, I'm writing a non-Star Wars project. I'm writing a big 8-hour audio drama with a friend of mine, and we're way into it at the minute. You know, we're sort of about five hours into the script of it now. So, you know, 50,000 words in, and I'm longing to write some pros, and you know, because you get that thing when you always want to be doing something else. And so, and then I'll be writing. I've got a novel in the near future. I've got to write, and I'll write that. And while writing that, I'll be wanting to write comics. And what I love about it is the ability to be able to stretch different muscles. I think my natural fit is always comics. I started writing audio drama. That's how I sort of started my fiction career professionally. So dialogue and writing, you know, for dialogue is always what I like to fall back on. And so comics naturally fall into that. And because comics were my first great love anyway, and that's how I first experienced Star Wars. Long before I watched a Star Wars film, I read the comics. So yeah, so comics is always my sort of like my happy place. Pros I find more challenging, but I like that challenge. But yeah, I like the different things that each medium, the different challenges they give.
Yeah. So with you mentioned the audio drama, so I wanted to, I just got done listening to the Count Dooku audiobook, which I thought was really, really excellent. And
oh, thank you.
Do you personally consider there to be a difference between the audiobook format design that you did for that as opposed to the audio dramas that were really famous back and really popular back in the 70s and 80s? Or do you consider it essentially the same?
Yeah, essentially the same. I say over here in the UK, we have a big tradition of audio drama. And I know in America there was as well with old time radio. I love like things like The Shadow and the old Sherlock Holmes and Adventures of Superman. Over here, when it fell out of favor a bit in the US, over here it never really did, and we still have a national radio station, Radio 4, that produces and releases every day an afternoon play and a national soap opera in audio format. So over here we really still keep the audio drama tradition going. So for me, as I said, it was my first ever professional job was writing Doctor Who audio dramas. So It seems very natural, and there, yeah. I mean, I think with Dooku Jedi Lost, I think there was more narration that I usually do when I write audio drama. But that was part of the brief of what they wanted, because I think they realized that a lot of the people listening from the US market perhaps wouldn't be used to listening to audio drama. So it was a case of it would be helpful for people to have that sort of like narrative, first person narrative that you would expect from books. So yeah, there was a lot more adventurous being a narrator than I would originally planned.
Right.
But actually I think it worked for the format of the story and what we were trying to do. It became quite a natural part of it. So, and it gave us the chance to play with certain things. So yeah, I mean, most of my audio drama is far more straight drama, with no narration. I've written, you know, both. But yeah, I definitely see it's all part of the same tradition. And I'm overjoyed that it's coming back, you know, on a wider scale with podcasts and audiobooks and things like Star Wars coming back and saying, right, we want to, you know, because they brought I've been saying about it for a while, but they were the ones who, you know, eventually said, right, we want this.
Right, that's awesome.
And yeah, I mean, I'm really hoping it's going to be the first of many. Obviously, I'd like to write some of them, but also as a fan of audio drama and fan of, you know, someone who listens to a lot of audio drama, I want to hear more Star Wars because I think it's just great format for Star Wars. It's a great way to tell stories within the galaxy.
Well, I think your contribution definitely set a precedent that probably hasn't really been heard, at least over here, since the audio dramas of the actual movies, the original trilogy they did. The Brian Davis,
yeah,
which I enjoy quite a bit, but this definitely
There was some for the EU. You know, they adapted,
right, so they've adapted
Dark
books.
Empire, mm-hmm. Yeah, and things like that. So, but yeah, I'm pleased that they have chosen to do original drama rather than adapting. I mean, you know, they could have turned around and said, "Can you adapt Aftermath?" You know, which I would have done. You know, it would have been great. But actually, tell an original story, I think, was important because it meant that it was something new that people had to listen to. That it wasn't available in any other format, so it was a good way of making people listen to it because otherwise they wouldn't experience.
That's what made it so enticing to me was the fact that it was a unique way to get that particular story.
Yeah, and I think there's nothing wrong, and I think there are plenty of stories that have been told in canon and also in legends that, you know, could do well to be dramatized as audio, and I'd love to see some of those adapted. But yeah, I think it's important that the first one had to be a news story.
Yeah,
going back to the Marvel, you know, the comics and the fan fiction, you know, we were looking at the Tales from Vader's Castle cover, and I told Jameson, I said, this is very reminiscent of, you know, the old horror comics of the 50s, you know, like Tales from the Crypt and all that. Were those an influence on you when you were writing that comic?
Absolutely. I love all that stuff. I love horror comics. I love the DC stuff. I love the Marvel stuff of the 70s with Dracula and Frankenstein. We had a comic over here called Scream in the UK, which only lasted probably about a few months, but it was of that nature, and they were always a massive part of, you know, of my fandoms growing up. And Tales from Vader's Castle came about because Mike Seglain from Lucasfilm Publishing and I are massive Hammer horror fans, Universal fans, and so whenever we'd get together, the conversation would naturally turn to Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee and Blood from Satan's Claw and all those kind of films. And so we used to talk about, wouldn't it be great if we did a story where Tarkin was Baron Frankenstein from the Hammer's version of Frankenstein? Wouldn't it be great if we could turn Count Dooku into Count Dookula? And and we'd talk about our love of Portmanteau horror, you know, Amicus movies of the 70s, which obviously were based, a lot of them, on the EC Comics Fort of Horror and that kind of thing. And Creepshow, and yeah, that was all that kind of, that part of horror got wrapped up in the idea that eventually became Tales from Vader's Castle. And so when we first planned the first series for last year, we sat down at San Diego Comic Con and just basically listed the types of stories we'd like to tell. We want to tell a witch story, we want to tell a haunted house story, we want to tell a, you know, a Dracula story, and there were far more than we had space for within the comic, and because of that, we knew there would be certain things that we'd want to do that we might not be able to do within straight canon. All these stories are canon, but they're being told by other people, so, you know, unreliable narrators and all that. You put emphasis on certain parts of the story. I love the idea that Star Wars has the capability to have real events being fictionalized by characters within the continuity. And so, yeah, we're not saying that, you know, Count Dooku was definitely turned into a vampire, but something obviously happened to him on that planet, which later, you know, people talked about, and that's how they interpreted it. So, and it might have happened, you know, again, we don't know, but the idea was to do a Halloween special series of the stories that people would tell around a crackling fire, you know, and it would be these characters that are so big. You know, you get to the point when you get to the first series is set around the time of Rogue One. You know, people would tell stories of Count Dooku and the Jedi Knights, you know, and they would be the Draculas of their time. They would be the King Arthurs of their time. You know, these are Robin Hoods. You know, they would have gone into legend. And so that was the basis for it. Yeah, and it definitely came from a love of EC, a love of Hammer, and everything that goes with it.
Just to comment a little bit further on that, we actually did a review of the first one with the ghost and Kanan, yes, and Hera a little while ago, and you mentioned the whole campfire story kind of element, and I'm pretty sure, I'm still editing the podcast, but pretty sure we actually used like a marshmallow flavor. We kind of end on the flavored of a blue milk kind of thing, like a roasted marshmallow flavor, because we were kind of imagining telling ghost stories at the campfire, so we got that vibe just by reading it, so it definitely helped. We really enjoyed it.
Yeah, one of the original ideas I had was originally it was going to be set much later. So we were going to be using the characters that we use in Star Wars Adventures, who are the storytellers who tell the backup strips. And another idea I threw out there was, what if this is Han and Luke sitting telling stories? But again, that tied in too much because it meant we couldn't really tell stories about them. Not really. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was definitely the idea of, you know, you park a spaceship on a scary planet, you make a fire outside by, you know, blasting some rocks or whatever, and then you start telling these stories. Yeah, it was definitely the idea.
Yeah, well, it came across very easily.
Excellent.
So I wanted to ask, you know, you were talking about the Hammer horror movies, which I'm kind of a closet fan of those. Mm-hmm. What are some more, I guess, stories you would like to see with Hammer actor combos who are in Star Wars, you know, expanded on Vader's Castle?
That's a really good story. Right, so let's think. Who else is there from the Hammer staple? I mean, obviously, we've got the big two. You know, you've got Lee and Cushing. You can't get away from that. I'm trying to think. Right, my brain's gone it's early for you. I know it's really early for you, so I feel a bit bad saying this. But so, what else do you have from Hammer? Who else do you have from Hammer in the original trilogy? Well, you know, for types of story, I would love to see, and I did it a little bit in the Free Comic Book story we did earlier on this year. But I'd love to see a proper mummy. We've done. I mean, I think there should be more mummy stories in general. And the mummy's lost out to the zombie in recent years, and I think there should be a return to mummies in general. And so I'd like to do a proper mummy story within Star Wars. We haven't really yet done a werewolf story.
I was going to mention that.
So, you know, we've done a little bit with the sort of vampire story turned in. It was a bit of a sort of half and half werewolf vampire our sort of our bat creatures. But yeah, I'd love to do a proper mummy or a werewolf story within Star Wars. And also one of my favourite Hammer films is The Plague of the Zombies, which is it's not so much Romero zombies, but it's the original idea of sort of Haitian zombies of zombies as slaves. So there is it's a story about Cornwall and tin miners, and they're using zombies down the mine. And I think there's lots you could be doing in Star Wars with that kind of idea. So, there's plenty to come back to in future, I think, if we have, you know, Tales from Vader's Castle 3, 4, 5, 6 in future years, which I'm obviously hoping we do.
Yeah, so are we. What are some of your favorite personal horror classic film or characters?
Oh, okay. Well, from Hammer's staple, I think the Frankenstein films. I love the fact they took Frankenstein and made him a complete git. You know, because obviously when you get in Universal and also in Mary Shelley, right back at the source, I mean, he's misguided, he's not evil, whereas he is completely evil in the Frankenstein films for Hammer, and increasingly more so. And I think Cushing has never been more chilling and more urbane as well as when he was playing Frankenstein. I love The Reptile, which is another Hammer classic. From beyond Hammer, I am a huge Universal fan. Bride of Frankenstein is quite simply the best movie ever made, ever. The Wolfman, I think The Wolfman cycle is incredible too. Old Dark House, when you're talking about Universal, which I think has forgotten quite a bit. A modern film I watched recently, and I would recommend to any horror fans, is Tigers Are Not Afraid, which I think is on Shudder at the minute as an exclusive, and it's a Mexican horror film, and it's a ghost story. It's a couple of years old now, or last year, and it's set during the sort of the Mexican drug wars of the recent years, and an area of Mexico City which is almost like a ghost town. It's all about these kids who are surviving in these sort of urban graveyards, and the ghosts come back. And that, I watched that the other day, and I think that's incredible, and I think that's going to be coming up there as one of my favorite horror films of the future. And I think it's going to be a classic, and I think everyone should go and watch that. But yeah, it's one of those questions when you get asked what your favorite horror films, your brain goes blank for a minute because there's just so many. But yeah, I mean, I will always reach for the Hammer box sets if I, you know, I get to the point where I don't know what to watch, and yeah, and it will always be the Frankenstein films that will come out first.
Do you feel that the Star Wars universe has kind of been lacking in horror-based stories?
I think Star Wars, and I think one of the reasons it appeals to me, as I said, I'm an old Doctor Who fan as well, so monsters are very important. You know, the horror films I mentioned, Wolfman, Frankenstein, you know, zombie movies, mummies, monsters are, you know, prominent in all of those. So there are, I think Star Wars for me has always been a monster series. Going, especially when you know, Empire was the first movie I saw, and obviously my cultured Star Wars fan reference will be that, yes, Empire is my favorite film. Return to the Jedi made me a fan, because Return to the Jedi is just fun from beginning to end, and has Jabba, and has the entire Jabba Palace, which is just full of monsters, you know, and it has a kaiju in it, for goodness sake, in a cage. So, yeah, monsters are so wrapped up in what I love about Star Wars. As for horror, yeah, I think there are stories that have horror elements. I'd like to see a little bit more horror in Star Wars, you know, proper horror stories within Star Wars. But I think you can't get too far away from horror within Star Wars anyway, because, again, I would put Darth Vader up there as one of the greatest movie monsters of all time. Because, again, he is up there with Frankenstein's monster and Dracula as being a complex character. You know, he's not just a Jason or whatever, you know, who's there as a sort of just a slasher. He has a character, he has an arc, and he has pathos. And so I think horror is at the basis of so much of Star Wars, because if you look at the dark side, you look at the baddies, you look at Darth Maul, you look at the Emperor, they are steeped in horror. And they're steeped in sorcery, and they're steeped in necromancy. And so, yeah, I think you can't separate Star Wars and horror, really, because they are so it's so ingrained in the basic structure of it.
Yeah, well said. Who, to just a quick change of direction here, who do you think is your favorite Star Wars character?
Oh, I hate this question because it changes all the time. My youngest daughter makes me say Chewbacca, and I say that actually because Chewbacca is one of the greatest characters of all time. But she's got a shrine to Chewbacca in her bedroom, so she always makes me say. I don't know. It does change all the time. I suppose the one I always come back to is Obi-Wan, and I love writing Obi-Wan, and I think I obviously loved Obi-Wan as a kid. The first Star Wars figure I ever got was Obi-Wan Kenobi. I had no idea what Star Wars was then. My gran bought it for me, so I thought she was just giving me an action figure of a old man. I was like, brilliant, thanks, gran. I think the Clone Wars completely sold me on Obi-Wan, and yeah, I think probably if I have to say who it is, I will always come back to Obi-Wan. But it does completely change depending on what I've watched recently, you know,
right.
What mood I'm in. Because, yeah, let's face it, Star Wars has such a massive cast. It's impossible, you know, I think sometimes to have that top 10 even will change all the time depending on what mood I'm in. But yeah, I think Obi-Wan, I think people forget Obi-Wan a lot of time, you know, and how complex he actually is. And yeah, I will suppose I will nail my colors to that mast. I am an Obi-Wan fan.
Well, you mentioned him, and I read your 40th anniversary From a Certain Point of View contribution, which
yes.
was the very compelling story about the ghost of Obi-Wan.
Yes, the death.
And
yeah.
That was, can you describe really briefly just a little bit of your experience with that project? Because that was an amazing contribution. I thoroughly enjoyed that ethereal perspective.
Well, they asked me to, if I'd like to be involved in it, and obviously I jumped at the chance. And the next question was like, which point of the film do you want to focus on? The original idea was sort of secondary characters or even tertiary characters, and, you know, telling the film from their point of view. And I must admit, I hadn't really twigged that, and so I just went I blurted out Obi-Wan because I thought this was a good chance to write him. I mean, let's face it, he's not really a secondary character in that first film. He's quite a major part. And I asked Elizabeth at Del Rey, you know, is anyone tackling Obi-Wan's death, thinking that someone would be? And she went, well, actually, no, it's not come up, which I thought was mad. But, you know, so obviously I leapt at that, and then had the sickening sense of, hang on, I've got to write Obi-Wan and his death scene from his point of view. What have I done? You know, what have I got myself into? How do I do this? And it all came back to the idea of, there's the old saying that the moment you die, your life flashes before you. What does that mean for a Jedi who is, you know, who's slipping into another land of the Force as well? So, yeah, it all really spanned from there, and so it gave me a chance to write something that was probably a bit more timey-wimey and Doctor Who-ish than I, you know, usually be able to in Star Wars, because yeah, Obi-Wan is experiencing different parts of his life at the same time.
Right.
So yeah, it was a very challenging thing to do. I wish I'd thought about it a bit more before I offered to write it, but I'm very glad I did, because I don't think I would have taken the plunge. I don't think I would have. I think I would have been too daunted by what I was just about to do. But yeah, it was a really interesting time, and it gave me a chance to write that element of Star Wars that I've always wanted to know a bit more about, it, which is Obi-Wan in the desert, being the sort of crazy old man in the cave or up in his house, and his relationship with Luke, and because they obviously know each other. So it gave me a chance to look at that as well. And a lot of it came down to watching I think I just watched or around the time I was watching the episode of Rebels, when which Obi-Wan's in, and you see him watching the Lars homestead and seeing young Luke run across,
right?
Which, you know, made me tear up a bit, and I just love the idea that all those years Obi-Wan was out there just watching and waiting and protecting, and yeah, and now obviously we're going to see hopefully a lot of that in the Kenobi series, which I can't wait. Exactly. So I think it's going to be a really interesting time of Obi-Wan's life, and all that time to, let's face it, all our Jedi Masters end up in the wilderness, it seems, with lots of time to think about what they've done. And so I think that's what I find, though, you know, the Trinity of Yoda, Ben and Luke, as you sort of hermit for Jedis, I find that fascinating, that idea that they exile themselves and then are haunted by the stories of the past, which, let's face it, is a horror story in its own kind.
Yeah.
So one question that we ask everyone who comes onto the show and is gracious enough to talk to us is, what does Star Wars mean to you on a personal level?
I think Star Wars for me is, on a personal level, it is remembering what it was like to be a kid and be that excited and lose yourself in another place and another time. From a emotional level, I think it's, I love the fact that Star Wars is a story in every iteration of individuals finding a family and finding a group of people that they are better with together, you know, and that they can't do all this on their own. And we see time and time again in Star Wars that when people try and do things on their own and they try and strike out on their own, it doesn't work. And so, yeah, for the lesson I've always taken with it is that, you know, while there's nothing wrong with being a self-starter, there's nothing wrong with sort of striving out, you still need people. And you need people to come together and work for something for the better good. And yeah, I think that for me, that's the sort of message of Star Wars, that there is a found family for you out there, no matter what your past, and that by working together, you can do great things.
Wow. Well, Kevin, thank you so much for meeting with us and interviewing with us. We've really enjoyed this. This has been a lot of fun.
Good.
Definitely worth getting up the hour. Well, we're happy to do it.
I don't think anyone listening to this realizes that for me, it's like, you know, 9:30 in the morning. For you, it's 4:30 in the morning, which is ridiculous, frankly. So thank you so much for getting up so early to talk to me.
Do you mind doing a thing for us before we go? Like I said earlier, one of the last things that we do when we sign off is we kind of choose our favorite flavor of blue milk for the episode. It's kind of a, you know, all right, tonight we're going to sip on this, or this morning we're going to drink this before we go. So what flavor of blue milk? And we usually do like milkshakes, or, I mean, it's really anything. What flavor of blue milk do you think we should leave this episode with?
Well, as it's so early for both of us, me slightly later, I think it should be a latte. I think it should be with heavy calf blue milk latte. I think that's the only way we're going to get through the morning.
I agree completely.
Yes.
That sounds awesome.
Excellent.
Well, once again, thank you very much for meeting with us.
No problem at all.
We've really enjoyed this.
Well, you know, you've got the details of Sarah, my assistant who I work with. In future, if there's any, you know, you want to talk about anything else, because there is stuff coming in the future that eventually I will be able to talk about, you know, get in touch and we can see if we can link up again.
Well, I certainly hope we'll be able to do that, and we will probably take you up on that opportunity.
Okay, no problem at all.
All right. Thanks again.
Thank you.
All right, then. Speak to you soon. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Whoa!
That was worth getting up for.
That was great. I mean, we literally got in even the questions we didn't ask, we got the answers for them.
Yeah.
There's very little that even of the stuff in black that we didn't get covered.
He was such a natural interviewer, too. Oh my gosh.
I know.
It blew my mind.
It was so smooth and so easy.
I'm like, you know what, Landon, don't talk. Just let him talk. He's doing the show himself.
Yeah. And, I mean, that was right at 30 minutes, a little over. But, I mean, he was gracious enough to do it. I think the fact that we were up so early is part of the reason he was so gracious to do it.
Well, I would get up early again for him. He was,
oh, gosh, yeah.
He was
I'd
great.
Do it again. That was fun. That was a lot of fun. Well, I have no intentions of pushing this much further than 4:40 in the morning because I would like to go back to sleep for at least 30 minutes before I have to get up and do this again.
Oh, gosh.
But thank you for getting up with me.
Oh, you're welcome.
You got the day off, right?
Yeah, I've got Lola today, though. They're out of school for the 9-week grading period today. They're doing great. Okay. So.
Yeah, we have a work day today, too. So that's part of the reason I could do it. I can go be a zombie at work.
I won't
fail miserably.
I think we're going to go watch the new Addams Family movie today sometime.
Okay. Let me know how that goes.
Yeah, I've been showing her the old, shows from the back in the day, and she loves them. She thinks they're just super silly, and she's like, let's go watch that new movie. I'm like, that's a great idea. Let's go do that.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. But anyway, this was a lot of fun. And the fact that he's, thankful, and yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
He was a cool dude. We actually had a real genuine conversation with him. Some people, you can tell it's kind of a scripted interview. It felt it felt really natural with him.
It did. It really did. I don't know if he had the questions in advance, was able to kind of plan for them or what, but it worked out to where it was such a smooth conversation. Mm-hmm. And he, like you said in the text messages, he led so easily to, well, that's the next question I have to ask. I mean, yeah, it would exactly. be stupid not to, you know, that kind of thing. So I think it was awesome. So he's hinted at some upcoming Star Wars projects, which might incline us to talk to him again. And I'm like, shoot, yeah.
Yeah, we'll do it.
I'll do it. I'll get up early again. I don't care.
That's one right.
time every few months, not a big deal.
No, especially for an interview that good.
Oh, yeah, especially for that. All right. Well, I'm going to go back to bed.
Yeah, me too.
Thanks again, Landon.
Yeah, and, yes, we'll appreciate it.
Yeah, man. We'll talk here on Thursday.
Sounds good. All
right.
Bye.
Bye.
How are you today?
I want to go back to bed.
I know.
I'm kind of glad it's only a 30-minute interview. I'm like, whew, all right. You have a shot.
Yeah, I know. I'm sitting here. I'm like, you know, I can handle anything for 30 minutes. I can do this, and then I can go right back to bed.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of what I'm thinking. I'm like, you know what? I think I might not get a cup of coffee first thing. I might try this. You know, just ready to go, and we'll go from there.
Here we go.
Well, he's ready to go, so let's go ahead and do an introduction real fast, and then we'll jump in.
Okay, where are the questions at? I can't get them to pull up.
They're still in our Google Drive.
Alright, I gotta figure out how to access that real quick.
Okay.
It's early.
Yes, it is. I went back and color-coded. The blue is all the questions that you highlighted, and green are if we have time.
Okay.
But blue are the ones that you were like, hey, these are the ones I really want to do.
Okay.
So,
let's see. Pictures.
Should be Star Wars Ties podcast interview questions for Gavin Scott. So it should be the first document that pops up, actually.
Okay.
Because it's the one I've most recently edited.
I see it.
Awesome.
Open that. All right, so we're doing the green, definitely, right?
Or no, the blue.
I'm sorry.
Blue is definitely.
Okay.
Green is. Yeah, I know. Trust me, I know that. It's like it's 4 a.m. He's gonna get some really energetic interview. Woo, we're ready to go.
Sorry, we got the energy of slugs, but you know.
Lord, yeah. All
right, I'm good to go. I got it pulled up here.
Awesome. Okay.
Here's hoping technology decides to cooperate this early in the day.
Okay, I'm creating a new conversation. I might cut off the call with you and restart the call with you. We'll find out. Thank you.
Oh.
Hello?
Hi there.
Hi. How are you doing, Mr. Scott?
I'm okay, thank you. Isn't it really early for you at the minute?
Yes, it's about 4 o'clock in the morning for us.
Oh, my heavens. Well, thank you so much for getting up that early to talk to me.
Well, we're really excited about it. I'm hoping Landon will be able to join the conversation.
Uh-huh.
Trying to get him here. Let's see.
I'm loving your picture on Skype.
Oh, thank you.
Working.
Yeah, sure. The funny story behind that picture is that my kid wanted to go see her, or wanted to go see Landon, rather. She was really excited. We'd taken her to Disney World. She was about 2 years old. And
right.
She walked around the corner and just freaked out. Did not want, like, screaming, no, I'm scared to death of that guy. I was like, well, somebody's going to get his picture with this. I'm not going to miss the opportunity.
No, of course not.
So, I jumped on it.
My youngest, when she's 10 now, she's obsessed with Chewie. Her room's a little shrine. And we're going to Galaxy's Edge next year, and she's determined to meet him. But I also think there could be a chance that she'll meet him and go, no, not doing this. But her room is a complete shrine to Chewie.
That is awesome.
Without question. Yeah.
That's fantastic. I'm trying to add him. Skype is a pain.
Oh, it really is. I spend half my life on it now, and it's, yeah. And half, and the rest of the other half's swearing at her.
Yes, that's about right. That's how we are. Usually it's either Skype or the internet, one of the two. Just
yep.
Constantly being...
Sounds about right.
Well, we certainly appreciate you being willing to interview with us. I know it's not quite as early for you.
No, it's not. I've already got coffee in front of me, so I'm okay. Yeah,
good
yeah.
Deal. I think we've made an agreement we're going to try and go back to sleep after this.
Oh my god, that's mad.
But
I remember I was a journalist in a previous life, and I used to have to quite often phone people from Japan, and it was just, yeah, it was the same thing. It was either stay up or go to sleep. You can't work out what you're going
to
do.
Yeah. Well, Landon fortunately doesn't have to go back to work today, but I do, so.
Right.
But
what do you do?
I'm a teacher, so.
Right, okay.
But fortunately for me, today is a work day, so it'll be a day where I can kind of zombie anyway.
Okay.
So you said you were a journalist in a previous life?
Yeah, so I was a magazine journalist. I used to work for technology magazines, and then I worked for Disney on Kids Mags, and then I worked for the BBC on various BBC Mags.
Awesome.
So, yeah, for a long time.
Landon, you there, bud?
I'm here. I just actually came into the conversation.
All right. Well,
that's cool. It's always good to talk Star Wars.
All right. Now I'm just double checking. All right. Awesome. Skype recorder is on.
Aha. Uh-huh.
I think. Yes. Okay. See the little red text. So we're good to go.
Cool.
Awesome. Well, dude, he just sent us a message.
Oh.
Click on your little three bars. Is that it?
Oh, I see it right there. Open conversation. Why is it not showing anything? Show me.
You gotta click on the little message.
There we go. Thanks, guys. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, go ahead and get yours in too. Star Wars. First one would be, we usually try to incorporate anybody we've interviewed to do a little bit of an introduction to the show, just your name and that the listeners are listening to Star Wars Ties. You want to put in, we'll edit it into the beginning of the show.
Okay. Yeah. Do we do it now? Yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
Hi, my name's Kevin Scott, the writer of Dooku Jedi Lost and Return to Vader's Castle, and you're listening to Star Wars Highs.
Awesome. Thank you so much. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Yes.
In there, and hey, Darth Vader in that black and evil mask, did he scare you as much as he scared me? Star Wars! Those here in Star Wars, my seventh winner up here! Star Wars!
you.